country in February, and they have taken videos for him while he was in Cairo's iconic Tahrir Square during the popular uprising, and he was also seen in front of the two churches that were torched and that caused two major clashes that resulted in the deaths of a lot of people, both Muslims and Christians. And the first clashes were in the church in the area called Seoul, southwest of Cairo, and the other one, which was in an Imbaba neighborhood, that caused 15 people. Yes.
Okay, Karim, if you can open this a little bit for us. This man, an Israeli spy, and from the information that we've been getting, he was trying to start a sectarian strife in Egypt. Well, the question is, I know it's a little bit early to talk about this, Karim, but from the political circles within Egypt that I'm sure you consult with, what would be, who would be the beneficiary of this, and on what motivation? Yes. Who would benefit from starting a sectarian strife in Egypt, as this man was apparently trying to do?
Yes. Of course, the former corrupt regime officials and the members of the former dissolved NDP party, because they are the officials that are in Tora prison right now. They are the ones that political activists say that they have been, like, while they're in prison, planning for chaos in the country and for causing these clashes and sectarian strife between the people. As one of the one that was held accountable for the last sectarian clashes that happened in Baba and the Mary Nina Church was a member of the NDP party. So they are and of course some other external forces that want people to distract people from getting over with corruption and charging the former officials and want them to take their attention to something else. So that's why they're causing the sectarian tension. And inevitably, this spy was aiding them in doing so.
Okay, thank you very much. You know what, Karim? I think you're going to have a busy day ahead of you trying to investigate this incident a little bit further. We're going to be waiting for a report from you in this regard. Thank you very much, by the way.
And now to Bahrain, where a court there has sentenced a female poet to 1 year in prison over her participation in anti-regime protests. The court convicted Ayat al-Hormazi for, quote, inciting hatred and participating in illegal gatherings. She is the first woman to go on trial since the Bahraini revolution began in February. And now a court in Manama has begun the trial of two former lawmakers accused of calling for regime change. Mata Mata and Jawad Feruz were arrested at gunpoint in early May. They have appeared separately in the same court, but are facing the same charges. Now, the court has already sentenced several people to death over the protests. Dozens of protesters have so far been killed at the hands of the Saudi-backed Bahraini security forces. Since the revolution started back on February the 14th, international lawyers have filed a lawsuit against the Al-Khalifa regime with the International Criminal Court at The Hague.
Let's give you news in Yemen now. Anti-regime protesters once again come out onto the streets calling for a transitional council. The demonstrators want the formal overthrow of the regime, while Yemen's Ali Abdullah Saleh is receiving treatment in a hospital in Saudi Arabia for injuries he sustained in a rocket attack on Friday last week. Reports from Saudi Arabia say He is in bad shape with reported 40% burns. However, Yemeni and Saudi officials insist that the 69-year-old Salah is improving and will be back home soon. Protesters have promised to block his return.
Meanwhile, reports coming from Yemen suggest that the wounded Ali Abdullah Saleh's eldest son is running the country in his absence, contrary to the constitutional laws. Now, according to the country's constitution, the vice president should run state affairs in the president's absence. Saleh is being treated in a hospital in Saudi Arabia for injuries he sustained in a rocket attack 9 days ago. Yemeni officials say Saleh's son, Ahmed Ali, has moved into the presidential palace following his father's departure. However, acting head of state, Vice President Abid Rabu Mansour Hadi, is in his office and barred from the presidential compound. Meanwhile, opposition groups say talks to resolve the country's political crisis have all failed because Hadi has refused to hold talks with them. We're going to switch over to Sana'a. We have Press TV's Mohammed Al-Attab standing by. So, Mohammed, give us the latest on the anti-regime protests and this power vacuum.
Protesters across the country are demanding, since the President Saleh's departure to Saudi Arabia, for treating the injuries he sustained in the attack on his compound. Protesters are calling for the formation of a transitional council. As one of the senior opponents of Saleh said that he is calling the acting president, Abdul Rabu Mansour Hadi, to start implementing the PGC's agreement and to start working on the formation of a national unity government. This opponent said that he is the joint meeting parties, which is the form of the opposition, are going to form the National Council of the Transitional Council by themselves, and they are working on parallel ways on trying to convince the acting president to work with them in this in the formation of a transitional government, as well as that they are by themselves are going to form a transitional council. They haven't yet announced officially that they have formed the transitional council, but they have a vote that they are going to start working on this side. The protesters are discontent with the continuation and with the length of the forming the transitional council. They have been calling for the formation of a transitional council since the President Saleh's departure, and they are upset with the slow response from the part of the opposition as well as from the part of the government. Also in Taiz, which is witnessing continued clashes, where in the morning people heard powerful explosions during the clashes between the tribesmen who came to the city to support the protesters, following the brutal crackdown on protesters, where at least 50 people were killed in the previous days. Also, there are clashes, violent clashes in the Abyan city, where the official sources are confirming that today there at least 18 armed men have been killed, and that dozens of others injured in these clashes, where also the fighter jets have been used to shell the gatherings of these armed men, which the government believes they are members of Al Qaeda. These continued clashes have resulted to the displacement of tens of thousands of people, where the acting president has formed a committee to investigate into the needs of these people who have been displaced, mm-hmm. and to look after their needs and what their situation.
Okay, Mohammed, let me just jump in here because you talked about the acting president. What about the reports that we're having now that Ahmed Ali, Saleh's eldest son, is actually running things now in Yemen? What information do you have on that report?
The official statement as the deputy minister of information said that Ahmad Ali and other leaders who are relatives to President Saleh are still under the control and under the leadership of the acting president, and that the Ahmad Ali is now residing in the presidential palace, and the acting president is working and doing his daily work in the defense compound. So far, we haven't yet found that there's a disagreement between the acting president Ahmad Ali, who's the leader of the most powerful army in the country.
Okay.
Ahmad Ali has deployed his forces to control most of the city of Yemen. Also, he's waging an attack against the tribesmen who are supporting the revolution. So far, regarding the army, he's in control of the situation in most of the country.
All right, at Press TV's Mohammed Al-Attab, with that very difficult situation taking place in Yemen, Arash, and then from Yemen we go to Libya, where clashes there between revolutionary forces and troops loyal to ruler Muammar Gaddafi continue for the second day in the town of Zawiya near the capital, Tripoli.
At least 13 people, Marzia, including a 7-year-old boy, were killed in the fighting on Saturday. Libya's revolutionaries say Gaddafi forces have been receiving reinforcements and are out in numbers. Intense fighting has also been reported in the western town of Zintan, controlled by the revolutionaries. Reports say Gaddafi troops pounded the city with Grad and Katyusha rockets, causing serious damage. There are no immediate reports of casualties as of yet. The offensive was aimed at seizing a town between Zintan and Yafran that was contested by both sides.
And Iran is hosting the second international conference on nuclear disarmament and nonproliferation. The conference is aimed at taking practical measures to make the world free of weapons of mass destruction. Press TV's Saman Khajuri reports.
The 2-day conference has brought together representatives and experts from over 40 countries. In an opening speech, Iran's Foreign Minister Ali Akbar Salehi urged the international community to pressure Israel into signing the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, NPT. Ali Akbar Salehi said Israel's nuclear arsenal poses a serious threat to the Middle East. He once again called on nuclear states to respect the 2012 deadline set for global disarmament.
Israel is the only obstacle to creating a Middle East free of nuclear weapons. The international community should push Israel to join NPT and make it accept the watch and inspection of IAEA into its nuclear facilities. The party that claims non-proliferation and preaches nuclear disarmament is the United States of America. It is the only country that has used nuclear weapons and is now the flag bearer for non-proliferation.
Because those that have nuclear weapons, although they pay lip service to nuclear disarmament, actually don't want to disarm. They find never-ending reasons to hang on to what they've got. And at the same time, they try to deny nuclear weapons to others. And in the end, this is not satisfactory. It will not work.
The conference also discusses Israel's deliberate ambiguity on nuclear weapons. Israel, a non-NPT member, is said to have 250 nuclear warheads. But as experts say, the United States and its allies continue to put pressure on NPT member states such as Iran, while ignoring Israel's growing nuclear threat to the Middle East.
We encourage all countries to join this treaty, and we think we consider it to be one of the fundamental elements of international security and stability.
We have to abolish nuclear weapons before they abolish us. If nuclear weapons are allowed to exist, they will be used. Now, maybe it will not be a global nuclear war that would destroy humanity, but even a limited nuclear war, such as the war between Pakistan and Israel, which is not unlikely, will cause consequences for the whole world. It will change the climate in such a way that there will be a famine, starvation, killing hundreds of millions of people.
Last year, Iran hosted the first nuclear disarmament conference with the theme of nuclear energy for all, nuclear weapon for none. During the two-day event, three specialized panels will discuss nuclear doctrines and practical measures to make the world free of weapons of mass destruction. Salman Kujuri, Press TV, Tehran.
Iran's ambassador to the International Atomic Energy Agency, Ali Asghar Soltanieh, says referring Iran's nuclear case to the UN Security Council is illegal. Soltanieh cited five legal reasons that prove the measure would be unlawful. The Iranian envoy referred to the non-diversion of Iran's peaceful nuclear program as repeatedly confirmed by the IAEA. He also emphasized Iran's non-stop cooperation with the agency as well as its commitment to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. The NPT, Soltanieh said these facts make referring Iran's nuclear program to the Security Council legally unjust. Soltanieh made the comments on the sidelines of the second International Nuclear Disarmament Conference being held in the Iranian capital, Tehran.
And now to Turkey, where millions have gone to the polls in parliamentary elections. More than 50 million Turks are eligible to cast their ballots for a new parliament. Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan and his Justice and Development Party are expected to stay in power for a third term. AK Party is hoping to win two-thirds of the parliament seats so it can make amendments to the constitution. Opinion polls suggest the AK Party will get between 45 and 50% of the votes. Initial results will be out by the end of the day. Well, earlier we asked our correspondent in Istanbul to tell us more about the significance of Sunday's parliamentary elections.
It's all about the new constitution and where Turkey goes next. Erdogan has called on the public, on his supporters, to elect 367 MPs into the 550-seat assembly, which would give him a two-third majority, which would pretty much allow him to go forward with reforms as he wants, without having to negotiate with the opposition. It's not likely that this is going to happen. The surveys predict that he will remain with a simple majority. What he needs to do is he needs to keep hold of the majority that he has now so that he can take a new constitution to a public referendum. This is in question because the number of seats are 330, and the CHP, the main opposition, has been re-energized because it now has new leadership, and some surveys are predicting that they could pick up 4% of the vote that they lost in the last general elections. So that's really key. It's going to be a big competition between AK Party to retain the seats they've got so they can move forward with their reform program. And we're going to find out tonight how Turkey's voted, of course.
A new report has revealed that Britain's Lloyds Banking Group may axe thousands of jobs as part of a cost-saving plan. British media reports say the bank may cut up to 15,000 jobs at its head office, London offices, and international outposts. The staff reduction is part of a new £1 billion plan to reduce costs. Lloyds has already slashed 27,000 jobs over the past 2 years. It is expected to announce the conclusions of its strategic review later this month, which may outline further cost-saving initiatives and the possible asset sales. This as the part government-owned bank plans to sell over 600 branches to meet European Union competition rules.
And remaining in the UK, Britain's Queen Elizabeth II has given her 90-year-old husband the title of head of the Royal Navy for his birthday gift. British monarchs have traditionally held the title since 1864. Now the British Queen decided to pass the title to her husband, Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, to acknowledge his support during his record-breaking 59 years as her consort. Now Prince Philip will be known as Lord High Admiral.
Let's move on to another story right now. Syrian troops have entered the northwestern town of Jisr al-Shagur. Heavy clashes have been reported as troops and tanks moved into the restive town. State media say the army has killed two gunmen and arrested many more. The government says that it is trying to restore order after some 120 security forces were killed in clashes with armed gangs there about a week ago. Damascus has promised to deal decisively with those responsible for the violence. The government's advance has reportedly sent thousands of residents fleeing towards government's advance has reportedly sent, or I should say in Turkey's border, I'm sorry, hundreds of people have lost their lives in Syria in months of unrest. The government blames the deaths on armed gangs backed by foreign powers.
Meanwhile, American Syrian demonstrators from across the U.S. have protested outside the White House in support of the Syrian government. Press TV's Ron DePence has the story.
Syrians living in America marched on Pennsylvania Avenue in front of the White House to show their support for the current government of Syria. Hundreds of Syrians from Florida, Ohio, Indiana, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and New York joined forces, carried signs, and chanted their support for Syrian President Bashar al-Assad.
We are all behind him. And Obama to know and his cabinet that the Syrian people are behind their president.
We all love Bashar. We all love Syria.
Unrest began percolating in Syria in mid-March. Scores of people have been killed. Government opposition blames government's security forces, but the government says armed thugs are behind the killings. These Syrians say extremists are tearing apart Syria, not the president.
He had did so many things for the country. He really improved the country, and we really appreciate what he did. He's very modern. He's a very educated person.
The pro-Syrian government demonstrators were confronted by a smaller but very vocal group of protesters who rallied against the Syrian government. Most of the protesters in this group are from the Washington, D.C. area and have regularly demonstrated against the Syrian government outside the White House since unrest began in Syria in March.
These protests have been going on every week. Now, this is the first time we see somebody trying to support what's going on the part of the government. You know, most of our people are quite appalled by the level of violence committed by security forces in Syria.
As the demonstration continued, the tension escalated and tempers flared. The two groups of protesters were separated by police. Lamia Afif believes U.S. support for Israel is tied to the unrest in the Middle East.
You want me to say the truth? Seriously? And you're gonna show it to everyone? What they want, just support Israel, okay? Anyone's. They just wanna, what's going on in Middle East, just because to support Israel.
The two-hour protest ended on an angry note with both sides promising to continue their fight for Syria. Rhonda Pence, Press TV, Washington.
Almost 1,000 bikers participated in an annual memorial ride to remember Canada's fallen soldiers in Afghanistan. Zahra Jamal is in Vancouver.
Hundreds came to register for the second annual Canadian Army Veterans Motorcycle Unit Memorial Ride in Vancouver in honor of the Silver Cross families of British Columbia. Silver Cross families are those that have lost their loved ones to the war in Afghanistan while serving in the Canadian Army. Organizers say they also do this to show their support and empathy to those impacted by the war in Afghanistan.
To recognize that service and the sacrifice of our Christian and our Muslim brothers and sisters over there, to ride here and bring this energy to support the community, not only here, but those from far away who are watching and seeing horrible things happen.
Mobilization Against War and Occupation Vancouver believes these families don't realize how needless the deaths of their loved ones are.
What are these troops doing there? What are these young men and women risking their lives for?
They also believe these unwanted deaths are a predecessor for many more to come.
We're seeing more war in terms of Canada sending troops and fighter jets and pilots to bomb Libya. We're seeing more sanctions against Libya, against Syria, and against Iran.
According to an Angus Reid poll taken in February, 63% of Canadians oppose the war in Afghanistan, likely due to more than 4,000 civilian deaths in Afghanistan, according to data from WikiLeaks, the organization that has made public thousands of classified documents. Yet religion and politics are not on the forefront of this event. Organizers say that's the last thing on their minds as they mount their Harley-Davidson motorcycles and head out to the memorial service in Chilliwack, B.C.
This day here is not about war, it's not about politics, this is all about saluting the sacrifices of the men and women of the Canadian Armed Forces.
To date, Canada has lost 156 soldiers to the mission in Afghanistan since it began in 2002.
The most recent fallen Canadian soldier is Corporal Yannick Charest of Quebec, who was killed by an improvised explosive device in March while on foot patrol with the Afghan National Army in the Pejwayi district of Kandahar. Zara Jamal, Press TV, Vancouver.
Well, that one does bring us to the end of this edition of the International News here on Press TV. Just a quick reminder of our website, by the way, the first page of which you have on your screens right now. That story, if I can find it for you, that was on just a couple of minutes earlier, was about twin bomb blasts that killed 35 in the northwest of Pakistan. But top news this hour, that is right here in Iran, that wraps U.S. and Israel for violating the NPT, and Israel actually for not even signing the nuclear nonproliferation treaty. That news and a whole lot more on Press TV's website. The address is oldtw.presstv.com, people.
And there you go. You heard it all from Arash. All you need to know about the website. Well, thanks so much for staying with Press TV. We'll be back in a few minutes with the news and brief. Stay with us, please.
Thank you.